Welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. The inaugural Perth Cardi Party, hosted by New Cardigan Andrew Kelly, features Michael Peach, Marketing Manager at the Nostalgia Box Perth, talking video games, video game history, and just how Australia's very first interactive video game console museum came about.
Welcome to our very first Cardi Party. Yeah. Oh. Ground floor, Perth, Cardi Parties. Awesome. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land we're meeting on today, the Noongar Whadjuk people. I wish to acknowledge and pay respect to their continuing culture and to the contribution that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people make to the life of the city and to all of Western Australia. I also offer my respect to elders past, present and future, particularly those who are with us today. I'd like to thank our venue in the Nostalgia Box for hosting us, our very first Cardi Party, which is amazing. I'd also like to thank Jesse Yao, correct? Who couldn't be with us today because she's in Melbourne, which is ironic and a shame. But we do have Michael Peach, who is the marketing manager for Nostalgia Box, and take care of welcome.
Cool. Thank you very much. First off, a big warm welcome to everyone, and thanks so much for coming down today, and welcome to the venue if you haven't been here before. I will be showing everyone around a little bit later, so you'll get to have a bit of a look, and more importantly, a play. So, before I get started on talking about the whole place, I'll start with who I am. So, my name's Michael. I have been working with the Nostalgia Box for about 15 months now. It started in December of 2015, was when the place first sort of came out. And I started in about the middle of that year, 2016, so about April, May. I started working here as helping out with assisting of marketing, but my relationship with Jesse grew quite a lot. We loved working together, and now we sort of had quite a sort of symbiotic relationship in terms of running the place. We worked together. I worked here, working in store for 6 months. The whole place is sort of our baby now. We work together to try and make sure everyone who comes in has a lot of fun. Professionally, outside of this, I work for a company called The Brand Manager as a technical marketer. So that's my day-to-day job. And this is my weekend slash nighttime slash whenever I get time job. It's my passion. Firstly, I'm going to start with a quote from Satoru Iwata, who is the now deceased president of Nintendo, which says, "Video games are meant to be just one thing, and that's fun." And that's everything about the Nostalgia Box sort of is all about that. We're all about having fun. Firstly, though, why video games? Well, for me, it's a personal passion. I grew up with them, and it was similar for Jesse. She also grew up playing video games. But I think now it's sort of got to that point where a lot of people grew up with video games, and we're now reaching that age where, you know, people who grew up with video games are hitting their 30s and 40s, and that's because video games are actually a 50-year-old industry now. Something that you might not have realized, but they've been around since about the 1970s, video game consoles, 1972. So it's to that period now where there's actually a history to them, and it's something that we sort of realized when we were developing the Nostalgia Box, and something that was really interesting. Video gaming is such a big part of culture these days. Almost, I think it's something ridiculous, like 92% of all families with children have video games in their household. So everyone, almost everyone plays video games, and if you don't, I sincerely recommend you do. It's a lot of fun. And it can be educational as well. A lot of the people who play video games, older people, say that they play them to keep their mind sharp, keep mentally aware. Younger people do play them for learning. And then a lot of us here in the middle, we just play them for fun. Let's move along. So why the Nostalgia Box? Well, for Jessie, I interviewed her as part of this procedure to try and get a little bit more information. I knew a whole lot already. We had a formal sort of hour-long interview process where I picked her brains. And she relayed to me that really the biggest thing that sort of kicked off this whole thing was that she got bored with her work. It became a drain. It became something she went in, day out, and she just got sick of it. It was a grind, and it wasn't something she was passionate about. So she quit her job, just like that. she was an accountant. Any of you who know accountants, or if you are accountants, I apologize. but she didn't enjoy the work, you know. It's for some people it's good, but for others not so much. But she always had a feeling that she wanted to do something different. Her father was quite sort of someone who'd run a few businesses of his own and sort of created things like that. And she always thought that was something she'd like to do. But she didn't know what to do. after being out of a job for a while and hanging out with some friends and playing some, you know, they used to come over and play some video games. She was like, man, I really wish I could play some of the video games I used to play when I was a kid with my brothers and sisters. And there doesn't seem to be anywhere we can do that. And if you don't have one still, and most of us don't because we threw them away a long time ago, there's no way you can really go and do that. And that's where the idea started. That's how it sprung. And from there, it sort of grew into this sort of like, okay, well, where maybe I can create a place where people can come and have fun playing all these old games they haven't played for ages. So it started as an idea of somewhere where people can just come and play games, but it developed. As she started thinking about and planning the way that she'd grow the business and create it, it sort of realized, actually, well, hang on, let me see how many video game consoles I can get. And then she's like, wait, there's a whole lot of video game consoles. I could get, you know, the ones from the 70s. I didn't even play those. Wow, there's some from the 1972 that had, like, you didn't even have anything on the screen. You had to put a piece of plastic in front of it to play it. It was, she got, like, completely enthralled with the history. And she really, really loved reading about it and learning about it. And then she went, hang on, if I love reading and learning about it, I'm sure other people are interested in reading and learning about it. And so the idea of the museum came about. And that's where really sort of, she kind of really got the passion about, okay, this is something I really want to do. And so the idea of the Nostalgia Box was born, a video game museum that anyone can come into, learn about video game history, and find out all the stuff they might not have known before. So we've got a whole bunch of facts in the museum. You know, you can have a look around, scattered throughout, you'll see how old consoles are, and a whole bunch of really in-depth information. So when developing the museum, it was a long, arduous process, collecting a lot of information. There's a lot out there, and video game history is actually really rich. Well, it's 50 years young, not as old as a lot of history, but a lot has happened, and there's been a lot of development and a lot of growth in a very, very short period of time, as there is with a lot of technological things. So we have a huge amount of consoles that have really, really in-depth historical value and are very, very important in terms of the sort of progression of the industry. And we've tried to capture that in the museum. Jessie did a lot of research. She went through a lot of books, a lot of reading for months and months and months. And it was a real challenge to try and pull out that information that was relevant and that was actually people would be interested in. We're trying to make sure that it was fun, but also informative. So a lot of the facts we have, some you'll see in when you go through the museum afterwards. We have things like, for example, Pac-Man wasn't originally called Pac-Man. It was called Puck-Man. For the reasons that the American market, they thought might sort of change the word Puck to have a different letter at the beginning. They decided to change the name to Pac-Man. Probably a good call. So we have some, you know, fun, interesting facts like that, as well as another fact that I really love is the idea that when Space Invaders was released as an arcade machine in Japan, it became so popular that the country actually had a shortage of 100 yen coins because people used to put them in so much. So they had to quadruple the production of that coin just to keep up with the demand for Space Invaders. So the industry has a lot of information in it, is sort of what I'm getting at. And we've tried to collate and collect it in a fun, interesting way because, as I said, video games are all about fun. So even though we're trying to teach people, we're trying to make it fun. That's how we sort of developed it and keep it on. So we focused on those which were unique, had significance towards the development of video game history, as well as trying to, like, you know, keep it interesting. So I spoke to Jessie a little bit about her journey in creating the museum, and I spoke to her about some of the challenges that she thought she faced a little bit. Biggest part, she says, is for the first at least 8 to 12 months, including 6 to 12 months of planning before that, she did it all on her own. She was 29, she had no significant other at the time. Her family lives in Malaysia. She has some friends, but for the most part, it was her getting up every day and working towards this goal that she had of opening her own business and starting the museum, the Nostalgia Box. So for her, the biggest sort of challenge she faced was motivation, trying to keep mentally strong and knowing that every setback she had was, okay, well, let's just, you know, let's try something else. Let's try and figure this out. You know, we have a lot of, I think Perth is one of those places where there's a lot of turnover, small businesses especially. A lot of businesses start, not too many succeed, and a lot of them go under in the first, you know, 12 to 18 months. And that was something that she really wanted to avoid. And so there was really meticulous planning involved in trying to make sure that we got it up and running. And since then, obviously, it's just been consistent, constant effort. So, you know, Jessie was working, you know, in the shop every day from 10 a.m. through to 5 p.m. She was going home, doing the orders for all the products we wanted to get in, making sure she was planning, you know, okay, what am I going to do? What's my marketing going to be? She was doing everything herself. All her social media, she was doing herself. All her, you know, bookings, people inquiries, all this sort of stuff, you know, contacting people, contacting the tourist bureau, getting involved in that. Everything was done on her own, and it became a sort of, the first 6 months for her was a struggle to sort of get up every morning and have the energy to sit behind that counter and smile at everyone when they came in and be like, hey, it's video games, let's have fun. So for me, she said that was one of her biggest challenges, was just maintaining that sort of energy. And I completely understand, as someone who's now working in a day-to-day job and then has other passions outside of that, having energy to do everything you want to do and having the time in the day to do everything, it's tough. So it's trying to maintain that positive sort of experience and that positive energy, because I think that really helps if you feel positive and happy and energetic about what you're trying to, you know, teach people or show people. If you have a passion for it, I think that really sort of helps them sort of get excited about it and get interested in it. And I think that's really one of the biggest things that makes the Nostalgia Box quite special. We've been very, very, very specific and particular in who we let into our, I guess, circle, our group of people, I call them. So it's like our people that we work with and that help us grow the business. We've all sort of had to show that we have that passion and we're committed and we just really love this place and the place that Jessie's created and the culture around it, and we want to help grow that. So I came into the fold about 6 to 7 months into the business. I just visited the place and I loved it with some friends, as well as which I was just finishing my last year of my marketing degree. And of course, you know, being a little person, it was like, oh, maybe I can get some experience. I'll go down to that place, the Nostalgia Box, and see if they want some help. So a little me coming down after uni one day was like, oh, hi, how you doing? I'd love to help out if you need any assistance. And Jessie's a lovely person. She was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. You know, that sounds great. You know, what can you do? And, you know, so I told her all about, like, oh, I do marketing. I'm happy to help out. You know, so at first it was a little bit of a, oh, okay, well, how about you come up with some ideas and, you know, present them to me and we'll, you know, come up with some plans and stuff. And so myself and one of my friends from uni, I was like, he was really excited about the idea as well. And I was like, okay, how about we work together? Let's come up with a full presentation. So about a month later, we came back to her with, you know, a full marketing plan presentation that we did and said, look, this is where we want to be. This is what we see you doing. These are our plans, our ideas, et cetera, et cetera. Now, she didn't love all of them, but some of them she did love. And what she really loved, though, was our passion and our enthusiasm. And I think that's what really got her excited, that someone else was just as passionate about making this place, you know, grow. And I was just like, yeah, I just love it. I think you've done something great. It's something unique. I love old school video games. It's my thing. So I'm totally down to be helping you out. And so from then on, I was working here as a volunteer for the you know, the next sort of 6 months. I was helping out with marketing, with social media. And we sort of grew quite close in terms of talking about how, you know, about what we wanted to sort of achieve and how we wanted to grow the business. And yeah, we've developed sort of a really strong friendship, as well as the fact that, you know, we're colleagues working here. It's from there, it was sort of like, we had this idea of, okay, well, we want this culture of fun about video games. We want everyone to be learning about video games and enjoying video games. And anyone who works here has to have that same sort of passion and drive. So that was sort of, I think, one of the reasons why we've sort of succeeded in a way. I wouldn't say we're successful, but we haven't gone under yet. So we still exist. So that's great. Overall, I've sort of portrayed it a little bit, but our ultimate goal is for visitors to come in. And when they leave, we want them to be happy. We want them to have had fun. We want them to enjoy themselves. So that's our ultimate number one goal. Our second goal is we hope to help people relive that childhood memory. So get that nostalgia. The Nostalgia Box says it in the name. That's why it's all about nostalgia for us. It's letting people relive those memories that otherwise maybe they can't do outside of this. Nostalgia has become such a huge part of a lot of things. Marketing's taking it and pushing it in your faces all the time. But in general, we like to create a place that's fun, people can just come to and just relive that sort of their youth, I guess, and the fun they used to have as kids. But the third part as well is we want to make it a place where people can come and learn about all the stuff that they didn't necessarily know about video games and video game history. Because when I came here, I didn't know almost anything about all these video games history. I loved video games, and I thought I knew all about Nintendo and the NES and the SNES, and I played all those games. And then I walked through the museum, and I'm like, well, the SNES doesn't start until 3/4 of the way through, so I got a lot to learn. So it's got a really rich history of, and we really like to sort of take people through it and sort of make it interactive. So there's a lot of information in there that you can read, but we also have these little, like, sort of, you know, fun graphics that sort of tell you little hot tips and, you know, must-know facts and stuff like that, because we hope that people, when they walk through, even if they don't take the time and they're not interested enough to read through all of the history, at least they'll take something away. But overall, the thing we want is that we want those people who come in and have fun and relive their childhood, we want them to share it with other people and their friends and their family. And I think that's some of the biggest, sort of, the best parts of the job and the best parts of the museum as well, is when we have people come in and they share these memories and this nostalgia with their loved ones. Some of the best times are when we have, I can give you an example from this week. On Wednesday, we had 3 generations of a family come through. So we had a grandparent, 2 parents, and 2 children. And the grandparents and the parents all came through, and they're like, oh, you will come through. And the grandparents like, oh, I'm not going to play. I'll just sit over here, and they can walk through the museum. And we're like, okay, fine, that's great, you know. And she goes and sits down and is reading a book, and, you know, and then we're like, the parents are going through with the kids, and then they come and sit down on the Nintendo 64, and they're playing Mario Kart. And then the youngest kid goes over to his grandma, and he's like, Grandma, come play. I'll show you how to play. And he grabs her over and pulls her over the console. And about 15 minutes later, you have the grandparents, the parents, and the kids all sitting there playing Mario Kart. And the grandma's got this smile on her face, and she's like, oh! And she's loving it. And at the end of the session, they all leave, and the grandma goes, oh, I had a lovely time. It was great fun. And they all left. And you just left there with a smile on your face. Like, wow, you know, it's fantastic. That's what it's for, like, those moments. So, yeah, it's something that we really love, and it's that sharing of that sort of history with those people who didn't know it, or, you know, maybe were too old for it, or are too young to know what it was. And it's all the time, just parents coming in and sharing with their kids. It's just really great to see. It's a really good environment to work in that way. Seeing this, like, you get some kids who are really interested in the history, and they'll come in, they'll be like, I know that Pac-Man used to be called Puck-Man. And, like, you know, oh, Mario used to be Jump-Man. And I'm like, good job, well done. Go learn some more stuff, and you'll show everyone up. So it's been a great journey. It's been a long journey, but we've managed to sort of, I think, grow something special. And I think it's all about that sort of, the way we work is sort of, yeah, we just really sort of all put all our effort and energy and everything into it. We've, over time, sort of expanded what we do. So originally we were just a museum with, you know, our games area. Now we run birthday parties, we run bucks nights.
Considered having our hens night.
Yeah, exactly. So we do a whole bunch of events. We run our own events. So we did speed dating. We've got our next event coming up in December is we're getting all the really old consoles out and putting them on display for people who haven't ever played some of the really rare stuff. And just, you know, we're trying to expand and always grow to try and get it out there to as many people as we can, because we want to share all this history and all this stuff that people didn't really know about. So it's been really good. The other part of our sort of, I guess, journey that we've helped have is that we've had the group coming from, we've had a lot of interest and work with the local Perth games development scene. So that's a sub sort of part that we do. We're the event partners for a group called Play Up Perth, which is a games development group in Perth. And so they host their event here every 2 to 3 months, where all the local games developers get to come in and set up all their games they're working on, and everyone gets to play test them. And we get to have a lot of fun, everyone has a drink and gets to chat and meet, and there's a lot of sort of really good atmosphere. We also worked with Perth Games Festival, and in general we're just really trying to help grow those scenes. We've had coding workshops for kids run here on the weekends and stuff like that. So it's all about letting sort of teaching people about video games and teaching people about how, you know, big a part video games are of our culture these days. It's just so important for everyone to sort of, I think, sort of know not just about what's coming up and, you know, all about Twitch and esports and all that sort of stuff, which is all lots of fun, but this is where they all started. It's back here with a Odyssey console in 1972. You know, a few people had a few little ideas of how about we have a game you can play in your own home. And that's where it all started, and it's grown huge since then. Overall, to summarize, I'll end with another quote from the great Nintendo chief, which is, even a small amount of power can have a great effect when concentrated on a certain area. So it's, I think that's something that we sort of thought about, is we picked our niche and we're trying to make as big an impact as we can in the, you know, in this big pool of Perth, which is a small pool compared to everywhere else. But we're trying to get as many people as we can to sort of know about it. And we think that, you know, we've done a pretty good job, and we enjoy what we do. And I think that's the most important part. So thanks so much for coming, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my talk. And yeah, have a good night. Yeah, questions, go.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So Jessie's collection, right?
Uh-huh.
So like, how many did she start with, and then before she decided to
start the
museum? None. Oh, right, okay. Oh.
A solid none. Okay. Is so the collection started with zero. When she realized that she wanted to do it, she then started collecting.
Mm-hmm.
It took, I think she said it was, you know, over a period of about 6 to 12 months to actually collect most of it.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably actually a bit longer than that of like collecting a little bit when she first started thinking of the idea. But it's growing now. We have over 100 consoles. It is a personal collection, so it's all hers because she runs the place. Over 100 consoles, but there's a whole bunch of extra peripherals and stuff. So I think we've got, overall, it's about 140 items in the store at the moment. And I'll answer a question that might come up now, which is the most expensive piece, would be, we have Commodore Amiga CD32. Strangely enough, not that old. It's only from like the early 90s, but it was released in very specific areas. Mainly Europe was the only place it was actually popular. It was extremely unpopular everywhere else. So it didn't sell much. It was quite expensive, and the Commodore went bankrupt a year after it got started being made, so they stopped making it. So, didn't sell well, went bankrupt a year later. That combines to make a very rare console, which cost us about $2,500 to import. So, yeah, there's a lot of consoles that are a lot cheaper than that, but yeah, the collection is, I think, really impressive. Yeah?
Is there anything on the wish list that's out there?
Oh, there is a lot of stuff on the wish list. That is our biggest problem, is trying to stop the urge. The wish list never ends. Yeah, we have a lot of things we really want. There's, you know, some really exclusive things, but it's, at the moment, we've actually hit our limit in terms of space. So we're in the midst of trying to plan and figure out how we can make more space to add additional wall space to put more things in. But luckily we've hit our limit, I'd say, because otherwise we'd be spending more money than we're making getting more stuff. So, yeah.
Sorry, on that, how do you, like, libraries and museums and things have collection development policies about what they collect and things like that? Obviously, your scope is video games
mm-hmm.
and consoles, but how do you go, right, I mean, you know, we want this rather than that?
Yeah. So the main points we look for are historical significance. So if it's either rarity in terms of wasn't very popular or whatever, and there's not many of them, that's something we definitely go for. The other ones we look for are things that had made an impact in the industry in some way, whether or not they did something different for the first time, or they were a new developer coming into the scene for the first time, things like that. Additionally, it's looking at interest. So whether or not there is an interest from people for it. For example, we actually have a Commodore 64 in the museum. Technically not a video game console. It's a computer, but the interest from the public in that was extreme. Everyone who came in almost was always asking, oh, do you have a Commodore 64? Do you have a Commodore 64? Because in Perth, in Australia, it was actually quite a very popular sort of home computer system. I had one. And a lot of people were like, oh, and they thought it was a console because it was. It plugged into a TV or monitor or whatever, and you plugged in your floppy drives. And so you could plug it into your things, and yeah, it's just like a standalone box. They released a lot of different versions of it, so we didn't know which one to choose, but yeah, we have now one on display and as like a sort of thing. So it sort of comes down to, yeah, in general about significance, rarity, impact on the industry, and then finally would be interest and how many people request it is our next one. But moving forward, our sort of main objectives are always to try and get things from overseas that potentially people in Australia haven't had access or seen before. So a lot of the things that I've got in recently are like Japanese exclusive makes of different consoles or things like that. The Japanese industry always gets a lot of weird and wonderful stuff. We have like a red Nintendo thing that's weird. We just got that recently. So just stuff that's a bit interesting and unique in that sense. Yeah.
You already mentioned Iniga is the most expensive console. What's the most difficult bit of kit you've had to hunt down or really, really wanted to hunt down?
We have a Philips CDI, I think, which was a strange little piece of kit, which is like a disk drive based console that was released, I think, in like the late 90s. Didn't sell very well at all. It's super unpopular. Not almost anyone's really heard of it. It's considered one of the most rarest, or one of the rarer, top 10 rare sort of consoles that we have. That was one that Jesse was really excited to get. So there's, in terms of, unfortunately, Jesse managed to get a lot of it quite easily because she had a lot of contacts and people who were travel, like friends and family, who were actually traveling around Europe. And also she's got, she's from Malaysia and she has friends who travel around Asia. So she got a lot of people to buy stuff in Japan and Europe for her and bring it back. So she just sort of sent her net out and said, if you see any video game consoles, let me know and get it back. So a lot of stuff that would normally be quite difficult to find, she actually got a few pieces sort of quite easily. But there's definitely some things on the wish list that I really want. The biggest thing for me that I want for the museum, and it's extremely hard to find, is we have a Nintendo Virtual Boy, which is great. We're bringing it out for our event in December. But what actually they used to have in stores to demo the Virtual Boy was they had a stand that was would hold the Virtual Boy up at standing height, and then the controller was attached. Here, you can buy the stands. They're normally, you know, one-off here and there. Someone got one from a Target when they were, you know, and has it in their house for like the past, you know, 20, 30 years or whatever. But, you know, they're normally about $2,500, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. And normally most of them are in the US, so it becomes extremely difficult to get them over here. So convincing Jesse to get one is going to be hard, to say the least. But I just think that would be amazing to have Virtual Boy up and running, like, you know, in the store over there, rather than having to do this weird, like, crouch down and look into it thing. So that, for me, is my biggest, most desired piece at the moment. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Covered? Cool.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
So much, guys.
That was Michael Peach, Marketing Manager at the Nostalgia Box, speaking at our very first Perth Cardi Party. You can find out more about the Nostalgia Box via their website, thenostalgiabox.com.au, and they're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of our very first Perth Cardi Party, and we'd love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And remember, folks, JFDI.